Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, named after the fictional small town found in several of author Michael DeCamp's books. This podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll hear interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, performers, and entrepreneurs, sprinkled with friendly banter about any number of topics, all of which attempt to view the world through the lens of creativity. Turn up the volume and enjoy the latest conversations in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast. If you're new here, we focus on people who do creative things, creative activities, everything from art to starting a business.
Yes.
I'm your host, Mike DeCamp.
Hi, Mike.
And I'm here with my wonderful fellow host.
I'm the fellow host, Nancy DeCamp.
And we have a guest with us today, Bruce Salazar. We'll get into Bruce here in just a little bit. He gets to share creative indulgence, and then we'll talk about what he does and why he's a guest on the podcast. But we're glad you're here, and we welcome you to it. If you've been here for a long time, you know the deal. You know what comes next.
Yes, Mike, you get to start off by sharing your most recent creative indulgence.
My creative indulgence. We always start with the creative indulgences, but which is basically anything you're enjoying that is creative or fun. And mine for this interview is I invented, at least in my mind, I invented it. Maybe somebody else has done this in the past and I just never heard of it and I recreated the wheel. But I invented a long time ago a way to draw that I call scribble drawings.
Scribble drawings, explain.
Well, basically you have a pad of paper and a pencil and you just scribble all over the paper.
Okay.
All kinds of lines.
Okay.
And then within that line, you find an image and you use the lines that are the core of the image that you see within the scribbles. And then you erase all the other lines and it leaves a unique drawing.
Okay.
I hadn't done that.
How long?
I don't know, 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. 20 years. It'd been a long time since I had done a scribble drawing.
Yeah.
And this week I did a scribble drawing. It's silly.
Okay.
it's I'm not done with it. Actually, the rules I've created for myself around this is you do the scribble, you find the basic image, and 90% of the drawing needs to be based on that original image that you see, the original lines. And then I'm allowed to use a few extra lines to accent. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to eventually, the one I did this week, I'm going to eventually use some markers and color pencils and stuff, and I'm going to color it. I'm going to fill it in.
Okay.
And create a full finished scribble drawing image out of that
scribbling that you started. Yeah.
Now, when I'm all done, it may look absolutely stupid, but it's just something fun that
you're
doing.
You're exploring that piece, right?
I'm exploring it. It's something for me to do to indulge my creative nature.
There you go.
Beyond the writing.
Right.
So that's my creative indulgence. Right. I also posted the base image.
Yeah.
I posted it on Facebook to ask people to name it. And it kind of looks like it's a dog's head, but it's got this hair that kind of comes out. And somebody called it the Trump Up.
Okay.
Because they said it looked like a...
Well, we'll see where it ends up. Huh?
A blend of Donald Trump and a puppy.
Okay.
I'm like, I didn't see it at first, but I see it now. I didn't draw it like that on purpose. But I had all kinds of names. But that was just the core base drawing.
Sure.
Not completely done. Nancy, what about you?
What's my most recent creative indulgence? Well, everybody knows I love books and reading. And there's a book that I've been reading recently called Sabbath by Wayne Muller. And what it does, it takes a variety of faith perspectives on Sabbath. You think rest, stop work, stop what you're doing, but also talks about refreshing and refueling activity during that time frame. And I've really enjoyed it because it's made me also think about, I often find that my most creative ideas come in the quiet, or I'm in the shower, not doing anything else. And it's like, oh, I could do this, whether it's a creative approach to something at work or it's something I want to do around the house or an activity. So I'll say that would spend my creative indulgence is reading through that book on Sabbath and the different perspectives and approaches to what Sabbath is.
How'd you come across that book, Nancy?
Well, we had visited some friends in North Carolina, and actually a church that they were going to was doing a study on Sabbath. And I looked up some of the books, different things that they were reading related to that. And that's how I got started on it. I thought, I'm not always so good about stopping. Resting. It's not my nature. And I thought this would probably be a good thing to contemplate.
It's not one of your core.
It's strengths. Not one of, yeah.
Yeah, you'll just go until you drop.
Right.
She's one of those people, Bruce, that used to, her parents would take her to a party and she would party, and then they would eventually find her asleep on the floor behind the couch because she just eventually just dropped.
I'm like, that doesn't surprise me.
So, Bruce. Yeah. We're glad to have you here today.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Sure. Tell us about something that you have indulged in from a creative perspective recently.
So probably right now, the most common thing that I'm using for a creative indulgence is actually skateboarding. I've been skateboarding since I was really young. And, you know, when you're younger, you know, you're broke and you don't have any money and you don't get to, you know, buy boards or buy
right.
You know, different and color
when
things.
When you're older and you skateboard, then you just break.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, you have to be way more careful when you're older, but you do end up with adult money. And so when, you know, other people are spending money on golf clubs and golf dues or whatever, and hunting and ammo and all that type of stuff, I spend mine, you know, stuff on skateboard stuff. And so then you can buy different color grip tape and put all these different designs on your board. And instead of just some people just slap on a black piece and just call it done. But I like to get kind of, you know, artsy about it and just do whatever with a different color of, you know, stuff or whatever. And so that's fun. But then even the act of it itself is like a artistic expression, you know, because there's it's not like you have to complete something a specific way in order to get points like a regular, you know, sport. You know, it's like, can you do this trick or can you not? And what's the next trick that you're going to follow it up with? And so, you know, you do one thing and then you connect it to another thing, you connect it to another thing. And then as you get better, you start just creating like this, they call it a line. And the line is just nothing but like, how are you going to connect one trick to another? And that's where skateboarders get real, basically just impressed with each other of like, oh sure. Man, I never thought of that. That was a cool way to connect this to this because I would never saw the concrete that way. Or I never saw the, you know, this, you know, part of the ramp connect to, you know, that other part, you know, the way it did. And some people just connect things differently and it's cool to see, you know, what most people just look at as like a set of stairs or a curb, like a skateboarder can see endless things to do.
Whatever. Right.
That
right.
sounds very yeah. much like, I have a very good friend who's a pretty well-known jazz pianist here in town.
Yeah.
And as we, you know, he and I commute, we do Muay Thai together. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of, usually every week, there's once a week I'm picking him up. We're commuting and we're talking and he talks a lot about jazz. And it sounds very much that layering, that learning, that shifting and adjusting.
Yeah.
That improvisation.
Improvisation. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does one go to skateboard
here in central Indiana?
Yeah. So you'd be surprised. I didn't, you know, when we first moved here, probably 13, 14 years ago, there wasn't really too many options. There's an indoor park not far from the airport. And then there's a really big concrete park from next to Marion University. And then they call them prefab parks. They're just like metal ramps that are just kind of stuck together and they're not really the most fun thing. But then recently there's been an organization called Hunger Skate Parks and they've been building concrete free skate parks that are like, you know, paid for by the city basically, in all these different areas of town.
Oh, wow.
And then, so within the past, you know, however many years since we've lived here, within just like the Indianapolis region, I'll have to say not Indianapolis proper. They probably put up, you know, at least, you know, 3 to 4 other parks. So the nearest one here is in Greenwood, Northeast Park.
Okay.
Over there by pretty close to Greenwood Airport.
Super
close to here. You know, not even 10 minutes from here.
Yeah.
So that's where most people do that around here now. And pretty nice to have it that close and it's free.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I had a skateboard when I was a young guy.
You know, one of my brothers did, and you talk about the deck course back in the day, we were talking, he probably, when he was a kid in the 60s, 50s and 60s, it was wooden.
Yep.
But I remember it being in the house and all the decals and, mm-hmm. you know, the design even from that point.
Well, and the wheels were probably.
They were metal.
Yeah, you know, metal wheels.
They were metal wheels, yeah.
With unground, like loose balls in them.
And probably.
Probably now you got nice urethane or some sort of wheels that have precision bearings inside.
Yep,
that's what it is. I think I remember messing with somebody's skateboard.
Skateboard somewhere.
I was never very good at it. I did roller skating. Mm-hmm. As a young person, actually, my parents took me to lessons, and I never got very good at that either. When I think of skateboarding, I think of that being a young person's thing. Mm-hmm. And
you're still hanging. Bruce,
I'm not that young.
You're not old. You're younger than us. So you're still young in our mind.
But he's not a youngster.
No. Yeah.
So when you're out there on the skateboard in the skate park, you know, do you skew the age? Average age, or are there other people that are like across the spectrum?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Lately, there's been definitely a resurgence amongst the 40 and up crowd. And when I say 40 and up, I mean 40 up to 65.
Wow.
People who are just getting back into it. They used to do it a lot when they were younger. And now they're getting back into it because it's either their kids are starting getting into it or their grandkids are getting into it. And they're like, well, I might as well get back into it myself. And so that's pretty much what happened with me when my son got old enough to really start enjoying it. I always enjoyed it. I would always cruise and kick around, but I wasn't bothering with progressing and abilities and tricks and stuff like that. And so then once my son started getting into it, that's when I started pushing myself. You know what? I'm really going to pick this up again. You know, it's good. This can get into some of what we'll talk about later, but it's good for people to experience a new skill and to force themselves to get better at something. Even if that means getting hit or getting hurt or taking a fall or something, you're pushing yourself to progress. And so it's cool to feel that. And I think there's actually been a bunch of scientific research on it lately because of this resurgence, talking about helping people through midlife crises instead of buying, you know, sports cars and getting into other trouble, you know? So,
So
it's pretty cool. But I'm definitely one of the older guys out there, but there's actually quite a few other older guys out there. And I'm proud to say I can hold my own a little bit out there, and I get what they call unk status. Unk is short for uncle. And so you're kind of like everyone is your nephew or something. I don't know, all the younger kids. I don't know.
Well, now you're using a lot of male terms. Are there very many girls out there?
There's some out there, not very many. You know, my daughter starts slowly getting into it, but most of the time it's still majority guys out there.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Nancy, why don't you take that segue. I forget how there was a segue that we skipped.
We were
going to
have,
But why don't you segue into how we got to know Bruce?
Sure. So, as many of our listeners and friends know, that I've been pretty active for several years, but as I'm maturing, I came to the conviction. I'm also an avid student, so I'm constantly reading, you know, health and, you know, wellness, all that kind of stuff. And while I had lifted some weights as a younger woman, I came to the conviction you know what? I really need to do some strength training, especially as I get older. You know, what I'm doing now, sure, I'm active, but I'm I really need to add this in. So I started looking around to various gyms. I had a week off of work and I happened to visit Victory Strength and Fitness, which was close by, which Bruce is the owner of.
Yep.
Met with Bruce, talked to him, and other places that I looked at, I was like, can I hold this and get back with you yet today? Because I had a plan in mind. Because at that time, Mike had gotten to the point where he was pretty sedentary and physically just kind of, I would say dormant would be the most descriptive word, wouldn't you say?
My activity level fluctuated heavily with the seasons,
mm-hmm.
Which has always been a problem with me. I'd always get sedentary in the wintertime and more active in the summertime. And I usually, in the past, I was able to burn off any excess weight I might have picked up in the winter, I would burn it off in the summertime, and I was able to keep myself pretty well there. And as a younger person, I played a lot of basketball. Never was any good at it, but I could foul with the best of them. You know,
cyclist. You were big into cycling, yeah.
Right. I did a lot of cycling for several years, and road biking, not mountain biking, but I did a lot of road biking. And I would basically I ran a nonprofit fundraiser bike-a-thon every June, and I would train from March through that event on the bike and put in a lot of miles. And I did that for a number of years. Then I started hitting, I guess I'll tell a little bit of my story as we set this up, but I started hitting a few things that happen to people when they start to age. You know, a stress fracture in my foot, and then a herniated disc in my neck. And then, you know, pulled muscles here, pulled muscle there. Then a torn Achilles in one leg, and then a preemptive repair on the Achilles on the other leg a couple of years later. And it was just like one thing piled on another, and pretty soon I'm not burning off that weight. And instead of it being a full roller coaster, it was mostly up with a few dips. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon I found myself in a weight range that for my height, kind of made me morbidly obese, I guess. And it got really hard to do anything. Climb mm-hmm. stairs. If I had to get down on the floor for something, I couldn't hardly get up from it. All my clothes were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was just, I was getting to the point where I saw a point of no return. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if this goes much farther, I'm not going to be able to recover from this. And I was beginning to think I'd already hit that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the background.
That's the background. So I came home after meeting with Bruce. I said, Mike, I think I have something. Mm-hmm. I said, here's the deal. I really have a strong conviction that I need to add strength training. I'm not looking for the bikini body at my age, but I
wouldn't mind.
You wouldn't mind? Okay. Well, I'll see what I can do for you. But I was like, I really feel like I need to add this. I think that this gym is a great opportunity. I think that it's, you know, it's not some big, what you'd say, a box store.
Yep.
It's more customized. And so with the physical challenges you have faced, I really believe they could take you where you're at and improve upon things. Mm-hmm. Now, let me put it this way. If you did this at least two nights a week, we would be doing it together, yep. Something we could do together. But if you choose not to do this, instead of you sitting at home in the Lazy Boy two nights a week while I'm doing kickboxing, mm-hmm. you will be home five nights a week by yourself.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, I'll see. I'll talk to him.
some guys would be like, yeah, five nights a week without nobody around.
And so I was like, I would like your blessing that if you choose not to do this, that I'm going to do that. You're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want this thrown in my face. Cause I really feel this is important for me to do.
And I had to weigh it because it's like, okay, this is a commitment.
Yep.
You know, sometimes in my personality, if I make a commitment to something, I want to see it through mm-hmm. to the end. But if I'm left to my own devices with no accountability, I very often will find a way to fall off the wagon. And the next thing you know, I'm not doing it. And it's like before we joined Victory Strength and Fitness, I was a member at another big box mm-hmm. fitness place that's not far from where we live. Yep. And I did it for a while.
Yeah, for a little while.
And then I fell off the wagon. Yep. And it's like, I just don't want to go over there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Accountability is huge.
It's yeah. And so I dropped out of it. But I agreed because I needed it mm-hmm. and I knew I needed it. And it's like, well, this might be my last hurrah to try to fix this. Mm-hmm. So here we are. So we got to know Bruce because Bruce owns Victory Strength and Fitness.
That's right.
So tell us about, from your perspective, you know, Victory Strength and Fitness, mm-hmm. what, why you set it up, background and, where you're at.
Yeah. So, initially the plan was to go into ministry. So I actually had moved from Jacksonville, Florida to Louisville, Kentucky for the purpose of going to a school there. It's called the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And the goal was to, you know, to get a degree in ministry and move back to Jacksonville and serve in a church and just be in ministry. That was the goal initially. And then right when I graduated is when the economy took a dip, 2008-09. There was that recession everyone remembers, their housing stuff and all that. And when that happened, churches started drastically like cutting how they were paying pastors and stuff like that, but even more so how they were paying worship pastors. And that was my degree of specialty, was music. I'd done music since I was 14, and that was a huge part of, you know, the ministry that I was involved in. In fact, at some point in my college point, I had to decide if I was going to study Greek and Hebrew or if I was going to study worship and music stuff. And I had already knocked out all the prereqs and it was like just really delaying that decision. But then, you know, the decision came, okay, I'm going to return back to music stuff. But yeah, they were drastically cutting how they were paying worship pastors. And it was hard to try to find a job at that point for anyone, really, you know, anyone in any field.
Sure.
But especially in that field. And especially since we were trying to move back home to Jacksonville. And I had a buddy who was like, hey, you need a plan B. And I was like, well, I think a good plan B for me, which I've already been considering, is being a personal trainer. And he was like, I think that'd be a great fit, because at this point, or at that point, I had already studied a whole bunch on nutrition and strength training. I had a knee injury that resulted in me getting a meniscus, you know, surgery done. The injury was a result of skateboarding, by the way. So then I started studying like crazy. I found some friends who are already personal trainers, and they were like, hey, this is a tough thing to get into. You know, it's really easy to get the certification, but as far as making a full-time living out of it, like that's a whole nother story. But I just kind of ignored the warnings and went and got my cert done. And then after I officially got my cert done, I had already had my 4-year degree in ministry. I went to a big box gym down there. It's part of a small chain called the Athletic Club. So there was like a Louisville Athletic Club and Lexington Athletic Club and some other places. And so then when I met with them, they immediately were like, we want you, you know, we want you to, we're not just going to make you a trainer. We're going to make you assistant manager right off the bat. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
I don't even know, have any experience like actually training people.
Right.
And, you know, come to find out later, I'm just side note, but you know, down the road, I found out that like, that's very common for people to get hired into those positions at big box gyms with no experience. So, you know, this is why people should be careful when they're looking for trainers, in big box facilities. But it all kicked off very quickly, and I'm a fast learner. It's just, you know, just one of the things I get to be blessed with. And within a short period of time, the person who was the director ended up leaving, and all of a sudden it was on me with only like 3 or 4 months of experience to build a personal training department at this big box gym. And I have a director title now, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
You're still in Louisville?
Yes, this is why I'm in Louisville. Yeah. This is total trial by fire. And so thankfully, like a lot of things just came together as far as like finding the right people, having the full support of the general manager at that gym. He really had my back and he was a great investment. His name is Bob Scott. So if he ever listens to this, shout out to Bob.
Shout out to Bob.
Yep. But then it just kept growing and it was good. We were like out of all the, you know, cause like I said, it was a chain. So we met with the other members of the chain and we always outsold the other, you know, chains or whatever, the other members of the chain or whatever, the franchise. And so it was cool. And then it got to a point where my family was like, hey, you know, we're going to move to Greenwood because my brother was already here. My wife and I were like, we're not particularly fond of Louisville. So maybe we just need to move to Greenwood. Also, my wife was able to get a transfer. She works with the VA. She was able to transfer instantly. It was like zero issue with that.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. So then that already established, okay, we'll have work. I'm going to figure out how to start a business up there. I think I know enough about this whole personal training thing to make this happen. And here we are now. So
how many years has Victory Strength and Fitness been in existence?
Yeah. So when I first moved here, I was training at 2 different gyms, the big churches here. It's pretty weird to have 2 giant churches like Mount Pleasant and Community Church of Greenwood. They both had athletic facilities. Mm-hmm. So I was actually training at both of them and building up a clientele base.
Right.
And so then at one point there was a thing with Mount Pleasant. They didn't want, I don't know, it was weird. Anyways, I had to leave there, but a lot of people ended up working with me at the Gathering Place, which was part of Community Church of Greenwood at the time. And I just kept growing, and it got to the point where they were starting to establish certain roles. You have to be a member of that specific church if you're going to be coaching at that gym.
Right.
Well, I was already a worship pastor at a church.
At another, yeah.
Yeah, up the street. I was like, I'm not leaving that church just for that. You know, this is right. Crazy. You know, I'm like, I'm on staff at the church. I was actually using my worship degree. You know?
Right, right.
It was just part-time, but still, it was very valuable to me. And so then me and some other guys partnered up, and we were working. It was just right across the street, basically, from where we're currently at, right before the storage units over there. I think it's a music school or something now. I'm not sure. But the... that kept growing because I got this transformation program under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got that transformation under my belt, that program, it kind of blew up to the point where I was like, man, I need more space than what I'm currently working with. Cause I basically, if you know what the facility looks like, you can imagine I only had one quarter of that available of our current space.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was building that business in that one quarter of that, of what's currently available. And so then I found out that the guy who I was paying rent to was actually undercutting me. And I was like, you can't pay rent to someone who's undercutting you. That's crazy, you know? And so I definitely had to move and find my own spot. And that's when the first location was able to be established. And it was a roll of the dice. It was a total leap of faith. Looking back on it, like seeing how I operate my business and finances now, there's no way I would have made the same decision. You know. So it was a total leap of faith, but it all worked out. And that whole thing grew. We were there in that first location for 5 years. And then we expanded to where we're currently at, which is basically doubled the size.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been there already for nearly 5 years. So from the time I actually adopted the name Victory Strength and Fitness, it's been, you know, a little bit over 10 years.
Well, yeah. And I will say one of the things that attracted me to the gym.
Yeah.
Is that it isn't a big box place.
No.
It is very focused. Mm-hmm. We go when we, especially when we're together, it's fun, but we are with other people. So there is a community sense to it,
Yes. But
there's also a trainer there at all the time. So while it might be, you might not be there looking at me 100% the whole time, there is somebody there who is looking to correct the form or to answer a question of that nature.
Yeah.
And then you talked about the transformation piece.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it definitely, you know, shows great results.
Mm-hmm.
Michael here can certainly attest to that, but the personalization part is that I love because I came in and, being an older woman and heavier, I know some trainers, everybody has a bias.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
But for me to come in, and as soon as I started, for them to say, wait a minute, you've got something under your belt. Let's bump this up. Like, so it was very customized.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
To build my strength. And then same for Mike. We've been talking the last couple of days about his biggest challenge was getting on the floor and up again when we did some things, a burpee or something like that.
Yeah. I couldn't do traditional burpees.
Yeah.
I had to use a bench to do burpees, and I couldn't do push-ups. So I was like pushing up on an angle against a weightlifting bar. But now I can do ugly, really ugly burpees. and I can do push-ups on the floor.
Yeah.
Finally, again, I can get on the floor and get back up with, you know, after I've worked out for an hour, I might feel a little dizzy when I get on the floor back up, but you know, it's something that's much more feasible. Just so you all know out there, you know, I've dropped about at this point, I've been through two 12 week sessions. I've dropped about 40 pounds, which I just never thought I would see the weight range I'm in now. I've got another 40, 50 pounds I need to drop before I feel like I'm really where I need to be. We'll see how that goes because I've never been at that lower weight and building muscle at the same time. Mm-hmm. So and we'll see where that balance is at. But you know, I've got more to go. And I just did re-up for a third 12-week session. So it is transforming.
That's right.
I'm now getting into clothes I couldn't wear. I wore a I was at a war the other day.
We joked. He put on a sweater the other day he hadn't worn. Mm-hmm. Now, before 2 years ago, before we moved where we're at now, we had a dog 16 years old that we had to put down. And he pulls out this sweater that he hadn't worn in who knows how long and found a dog hair.
Yeah, I found some of Leo's dog hairs on my sweater. It's like, oh, well, there's Leo.
But I will say his energy level, you know, one of the things I told Bruce last week or whatever, I said, thanks for giving me my husband back.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Because he's moving around. Mm-hmm. He's able to do things. He has energy.
I'm still lazy as all get out. But, you know, I'm more active around the edges. Yeah.
You're capable at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sleeping 3 hours every afternoon anymore. And it's just, the more you do, the better you feel, the more you do.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So
right.
I will say the other thing that I've appreciated while it's been what I would say pretty customized. Mm-hmm. I will say that, with that customization, I rarely come home and the next day, like, can't walk.
Yeah.
So I feel like
that's my Thursdays though.
Yeah. But I feel like I'm pushed enough that I might be tired. I've had to work through the fatigue side of things at times, but I'm like, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Because if I came and I pushed it hard and the next day I couldn't walk,
right.
Would I want to come back?
No.
Yeah. So tell us more about your focus there with the transformation program, but as well as other things that you do.
Yeah. So, I mean, early on, as far as like working with clients, there's always been people with, you can say just issues, you know, it can be an orthopedic issue. It can be, I can think of clients with TBIs that moved, had terrible issues moving correctly, and younger ones too, like, you know, in their teens with a TBI and just can't move correctly. Then you have autistic people we've worked with. And of course, started working with older people, you know, and when I say older, I'm not qualifying you guys.
We are. But, we accept that.
Mm-hmm. Nancy's older,
but she's
5 days older than me.
So. Oh, okay. There you go. So then, you know, working with people well into their 70s and even 80s, and that happened fairly early in my coaching career. So when that happens fairly early in your coaching career, you just kind of have to just take it and just be like, all right, I'm going to
adjust
and figure out how to keep these people safe. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of common sense will tell you like, okay, I'm not going to train this person the same way I would train a high schooler. You know, I'm not going to train this person the same way I would train a professional athlete. And I have to say common sense, but sadly, like there are issues where people are getting trained without, and this is a keyword that we use in every like sales appointment. So, you know, like Rebecca, who also does some of the sales, she knows like we use the term appropriate challenge when we're going through the assessment process. And when people hear that appropriate challenge, we help them understand that there's two parts to it. And of course, the appropriate part is that like we're not trying to kill you.
Right.
You know, we want you to get results. And that doesn't mean you have to chase soreness or you have to chase pain. That's not involved in there. You know, that's so it has to be the right level for the person to be able to grow. Because if everybody, like you said, Mike, you after 2 12-week programs, you are now capable of doing a push-up on the floor. But if I had said, hey, welcome to the program, we're going to do 20 push-ups to warm up on the floor.
get down there and give me 20 right now.
Yeah, you would have walked out the door and be like, that's it.
No, I would have been taking a nap on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say the gyms that I've gone to other, the big box gyms or whatever, and I affectionately say I run into trainers that are bro. Mm-hmm. Hey, bro, you know, and it's like, okay, you have some training, you have experience, but you don't have wisdom.
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly right. There's some wisdom there that's come through the years of training. And then it's fun to, you know, point out that, yeah, we said appropriate challenge, but the other part of the phrase is challenge.
Yeah.
So that without challenge, there's no transformation. So we have to find that line of that balance of like, okay, this is going to challenge you, but it's not going to kill you. And then when you recover, you're going to be that much stronger and be able to progress and progress and progress, you know, and as well as talking about, you know, earlier with the skateboarding thing, like it's fun to see people who are older progress in ways that they've never thought they could before.
Right.
And
so, right.
Yeah. It's funny. I go to the gym and I grumble and I complain.
He's really good at that.
It's like, oh, this is killing me. I hate this. But then I really love how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
That's maybe a couple months in, we were driving to go and I asked him, or even afterwards, I was like, you know, you did great tonight. How do you feel good about it? He's like, I hated it. And my daughter would be like, he's doing so good. Why is he? I said, that's just his way.
Yeah.
It's like I hate it in the moment, but I love the results.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's like it hurts. Well, you know, I'm not a masochist. I don't like to hurt.
Yeah.
But it at the same time, I know the benefit.
Yeah.
I know the benefit.
Yeah.
So how do you, when somebody new comes in, how do you do the evaluation? What's the process?
Yeah. I mean, you both went through that. And so it starts happening the moment we just have you like lifting your limbs around.
Yeah.
And so the average person is just like, I don't even know what I'm doing. This is nothing. There's nothing to this. I literally just lifted my arm up. I lifted my leg up. Okay. We can tell a lot from how somebody's moving.
Right.
In that assessment, whether or not they're going to be safe in a small group format, which is what you guys do, or they need specific one-on-one attention. And so then we do what we call the strength test, which is going to involve like the squat and the push-up. And then we're just basically seeing how they can respond to our cues. When we say, hey, we're going to punch through the heels, we're going to spread the floor, we're going to push our hips this way. And if you respond and you're able to follow through on those instructions, you should feel better. And I'm almost immediately like 99% of people are like, what just happened? that last set of squat was incredibly painful and hard. And now it feels like nothing, you know? And it's like, this is the technique. This is why is why we specialize in this and why, you know, it's going to be worth your time and money to do this. You know?
Yeah. And I got no room to brag. Cause you know what I just finished a session where I was doing, on Wednesdays, I would do deadlifts and weighted squats, right? But when I first started, we were just unweighted squats, trying to get the form right, trying to, you were always like, stay back on your heels, keep your head up, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And I think you just didn't want me to fall forward and land on my nose. Uh-huh. But initially, it was hard just doing a regular old squat, but I finished up doing 110-pound weighted squats, multiple sets, and 160-pound deadlifts. Now, that's nothing to get super braggy about because there's people can lift a whole lot more than me. I saw a video on, it was a reel on Facebook or something, 8-year-old girl doing deadlifts with 180 pounds. I'm like, okay, so I'm not going to get arrogant about it, but it was something I couldn't do.
That's right.
6 months ago, you would have, you'd said, hey, okay, I want you to deadlift this 160 pound bar. Last September, I probably would have laughed at you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the benefit of, you know, trusting the process, making sure that and us basically making sure people are moving correctly first. And then, you know, it seems kind of funny because you think, well, everyone kind of has the same starting point. And then some people think, well, that's not individualized, but the way they progress from that point is very individualized. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if someone, and we say this in our appointment too, when someone's initially meeting with us, like if you're a total rock star at something, you're going to progress way faster. And if we need to dial something else back to keep you safe, then we're going to dial that back and keep you safe. And so that's when people start to realize like, oh yeah, this is, even though this is a class with, you know, 6 other people in a room, which is, you know, 7 people in a room is not that crowded.
And you have the space and the equipment,
everyone has their own assignment.
Yep. Yeah.
And everyone can focus on what they need to focus on instead of trying to keep up with some techno music and some dumbbells and dancing around. Yeah.
So, well, and that's the thing I think people need to understand too, is this is not a gym that's full of a bunch of machines.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not off on your own, just figuring it out. You actually are focused on free weights and you've got TRX equipment, and basically you're using body weight, you're using free weights, and you've got a trainer there that's there specifically to help make sure you get the form right and that you follow the process and that you're doing what you need to do safely. And so you either do individual or you'll do these small groups, right? You don't let people just come in and do their own thing.
Yeah. There's no open gym setting. We could do that, but that's a whole nother like business. Like
it's a different,
that's well,
a
whole I think about business. Liability on your equipment and space and everything.
And, basically what you're doing at that point is you're paying for a babysitter.
Yeah.
And you know, none of my coaches, care to babysit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They want to be actively helping people and be intentional about helping somebody. That's one of the drawbacks as far as like just gym business in general. A lot of trainers at big box gyms are paid what they call floor hours. And that's literally just them walking around trying to find somebody that they can rope into turning into a personal training client. And they get paid very little for those little floor hours. And that's kind of the situation there. It's like they're all too educated and too much, you know, they're worth way more than that.
So right,
it's
right.
almost insulting to be like, hey, why don't you stick around and babysit, you know, yeah. you know, right, and right. nobody might come in or maybe somebody will come in and it's just crazy. So that's why we have like the by appointment only setting. And in fact, you're there, you're in class and you're ready to work out.
Yeah.
You're not going to do a set and then diddle around on your phone for 10 minutes and then do another set. And, you know, yeah. it's very focused. And the mindset behind it is to help people to continually establish certain habits and disciplines. And so the habit and discipline, when you come in with us, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you've got your assignment, you got your folder there, your workout's all written out for you. You get to work, you're done in an hour. And it's incredible to see. I can be guilty of this just as much. I'm not making fun of people at other gyms. But sometimes when you go in without a plan, 2 hours go by and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't done anything and now I have to go.
Yeah.
you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, now the other part of the gym focus is besides the actual workouts mm-hmm. and the weightlifting and the yeah. exercise is the food management.
That's right.
So that's
it. And there's accountability also, to it.
Yeah. Accountability too. Mm-hmm. with the food management, the nutrition management. Mm-hmm. I know for me, I'm partnered with a coach mm-hmm. that every day I send a report to them, to him on my food intake and mm-hmm. my water intake for the day. Mm-hmm. And then I get harassing messages back, which are meant for good. And yes. they're not just there to
They've
harass me.
They've developed quite a relationship. Yeah,
Matt and I go back and forth and it's 99% of it's in fun. But,
yeah.
you know, there are times when it's like, really, you're going to pick on that? Seriously? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I get it. Yeah. And I know that there are different levels that you can kind of progress through in the, mm-hmm. in the nutrition program. I've kind of stayed where I'm at because it's working for me.
It's working, yeah.
So maybe talk a little bit about the nutrition mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So the, nutrition thing was a whole lot of trial and error over the years to try to figure out, what is the easiest way to get people to stick to this and maintain it and not just maintain it during the program, but be able to maintain it when they're done. Because I've done so many different, diets and programs out there. And if people are familiar with the term cheat meals, there's a planned cheat meal in some of the nutrition plans. And the problem before, and with even some of the other programs that I've done before, was that people would just live for the cheat day. Not cheat meal, but cheat day.
Cheat day, yeah, yeah.
It was a whole day.
Yeah.
And there was never any full-on, like, letting go of certain habits and basically just bad habits.
Yeah.
It was always just living, you know, just trying to survive until it was cheat day, you know, and then on cheat day, just go hog wild. And because of that, basically there's a big mental block of not being able to let go
yeah.
of those habits and those things. That's why people like we're not getting results or, you know, creating sustainable habits after 12 weeks or more. So it's like, you know what, I'm going to change this. But that's the main goal now is we've created such a pattern of things, you know, like the portion, the way that's designed, it's individualized because it's based on the person's size of the person's body. You could say it's based on the weight, but it's really based on the size of the person's body. So obviously your portion is bigger than Nancy's because yep. it'd be super awkward if Nancy was bigger than you, you know, and the head of.
And I will say when we first got married,
she's stronger than me.
I put on weight when we first got married mm-hmm. because I was eating just to hang out with him at the dinner table. Yeah. His quantity. His
portion, yeah.
yeah. And it's like, this doesn't work for yeah. me. And I will say in terms of the nutrition piece of it too. Mm-hmm. So I've been working with a dietitian for my doctor for various reasons.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you're like, here's the plan to start out with, and mm-hmm. here's what we do. And I'm like, already doing it. That's yeah. what my registered dietitian at the yes. hospital. It was like, oh, okay, this, mm-hmm. so it isn't some flash in the pan
nope.
kind of thing. It is very nutritionally mm-hmm. sound.
Yeah.
And not a fad, yeah. I would say.
Yeah. We try to create a system that is basically trying to maintain a balanced diet, but that system behind it is what makes it sustainable because mm-hmm. it makes right. it easier to plan and think about and figure out. And you can right. go to, and you know the code now. I tell people all the time, it's like entering the Matrix. You know, like when, you know, when they see the code and they understand what's happening to their life around them because now they can see the code. Like once you learn our nutrition process, it's like you go to Cheddar's, you go to, I don't know, Chick-fil-A, or you go to whatever, Chipotle, and you see the code.
Yeah.
In the food.
And watch those fat carb combos.
Yeah, there's that. Yep, there. Exactly. So simple things like that start coming together.
And quantity.
And you start understanding what, okay, now I understand why this meal does this to my body, or
and
whatever.
The importance of protein, the importance of vegetables, the you know, all of those things.
I've tried that whole, you know, keep it really tight for 6 days and then have a cheat day. And I found that I could totally undo everything I did in 6 days in 1 day.
Yeah. I don't like the cheat.
And I just did it. Actually, I just did it again because we had, you know, I've been following this whole pattern and I'm losing a bunch of weight. Lately, I've been, I lost quite a bit lately. And then Easter Sunday happened and, you know, it basically became a cheat day. Unintentionally. I didn't go into it thinking that way, but it ended up being that way. And I spent all week this week undoing what I messed up. So, you know, I think the idea of getting on a pattern, and I think for me anyway, if I find that I can stay on a pattern and stay consistent with it, it works for me really well. And when I fall off the wagon and I go completely haywire, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
I will say one of the things too, because I did do some research of smaller gyms, gyms that offered the nutrition component and the training and all of that. If you were to go to Victory Strength and Fitness, it's not going to be your $5 a month kind of gym where you get really just walk in and there's some equipment, right? But it is incredibly comparable to any place else that I have seen that offers all of what you offer. So, you know, sometimes people, I mean, you get what you pay for.
That's exactly right.
And you're going to get full support for your process.
And that's, that's why we kind of, you know, pick the price point, you know, based on what it is right now. Cause we know what other people are offering and we know we're over delivering compared to what else is being offered out there. And that's always been the intention. And thankfully I had some good business coaches that were like, hey, you need to figure this out. You need to figure out how to over deliver on what you're offering, but to validate it, you know, make sure that you're like, you know, if you're asking for a premium that you're justifying that premium. And then, so it's difficult because, you know, as a business owner and as a personal trainer, a lot of trainers like can really exhaust themselves on figuring out how to do that. But then, of course, we teach you guys a system on how to, you know, gain strength and nutrition. Like there's a system for the coaches to follow that makes it way easier on them as well. So it eliminates a lot of the behind the scenes work.
How do you find trainers?
That's a good question.
Because I know I've personally worked with four. You have six or seven right now?
No, there's so we have the three part-time guys and we have the two like full-time ladies. So there's,
and I've just worked five. With the guys.
And then there's me. So there,
And you, another trainer that left recently to do some other things. I'd worked with him for a while.
That's too. And he, and we, so he was part of the evening crew. But so there's currently, you know, five and then myself. And so Rebecca was, she went to my church and she, where I was leading worship, and I knew that she was working in that field. And there was a time where I really needed a female coach specifically because, you know, in that industry, like you can't just have all guys. It's just weird. And so then it all worked out really well. She was, the other company she was working for was just asking too much, you know, of her and stuff. And so then I told her, hey, look, I'm not going to require that of you. And if, you know, I'm going to end up paying you more. So why don't you just make the switch?
I need to say this for Rebecca's sake. Rebecca is awesome. Rebecca, if you're listening to this, here you go. Rebecca is awesome.
And so then, so that worked out really well. And she's been a very vital part of the team. And then Erica was actually a client for 3 years before she became a coach. But I remember when she first came on, she was like, hey, I'm retired from the military and, you know, I'm really passionate about this stuff. And she had some, you know, orthopedic issues she needed to work through. And so then she said like, I'd love to open my own gym and have my own gym and do this and that. I was like, okay, cool. So I kept that in the back of my head, you know, and then she totally crushes it as a client. So if you worked with Erica, you, that doesn't surprise you, you know? So totally crushes it, is thrilled with her results and the improvement on her orthopedic issues. And then I got to the point where we needed a coach and I was, I remembered, it's like, hey, Erica, how would you feel about coming on board as a coach? Because I remember you saying this back then. And she was like, absolutely. I'd love to do that. Like, all right, heck yeah. And so since she was fresh off of being a client for 3 years, and she was actually part of one of the classes that I had personally coached myself for 3 years. So she was learning it directly from me for three years. So she was just easy, just plug in and get at it. Right. So, yeah. So she,
well, let me just say, I've been quite fond of all the coaches I've had. So, you know, I've had Wes and Gus and, Matt and
Matthew.
Yep. We'll call him Matthew 2.0. Matthew 2.0. We had the other Matt. But I've gotten to where I'm very fond of all of them and I enjoy working with them. Mm-hmm. Matt's my food coach. So he and I have a kind of a special relationship. Yeah. And so I especially like working with him.
Yep.
So don't lose him.
No, I don't want to lose any of them.
He's awesome. But, you know, I will say too, because a lot of times we're coming in, we usually go to the later class and you're leaving for the day. Mm-hmm. But even just the other day, you stop and say, wait a minute, your elbows are out. You know, and at that point, my trainer that night, Wes, was like, oh, yeah. And he came over and then helped correct my form on that. So, you know, that attention to detail is still there.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we really try to drill with all the coaches, because like I said, we already have a system in place to make it easy on everybody. So it's easier on them to help everyone because of the established, you know, process there.
Right.
But yeah, Young Matt actually approached me. He was graduating from Anderson University.
Yeah.
And he sends me a message. Hey, you know, I see this gym. I'm really interested in potentially working there. And so we get quite a few messages like that. So I don't really like pay too much attention to them.
Sure.
But then he kept on it. And I was like, okay, let me look into this guy a little bit more.
He was persistent.
Yeah, he was pretty persistent, which was, you know, actually a good thing, and I appreciated it. And but then once I learned more about him and who he was as a person, and then his, you know, the research he had done and the schooling that he had received, I was like, okay, this guy's gonna be, I think he's gonna be a great fit for this.
Yeah.
And he's obviously has been, you know.
Yeah.
Matthew and Wes are both Indeed finds. And so
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then, that's a tricky process, because, you know, if you know, understand the environment of our gym, when you're looking through resumes, you're trying to like figure out what's a red flag, what's a green flag.
Yeah.
And I've thankfully been able to, you know, apply, like think about, okay, what are my red and green flags? And then that system that I created worked out, you know, as far as bringing in guys like Wes and Matthew.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's shift a little bit, because we've been going for a while.
Oh, okay.
This is good.
And it's been a great conversation, but I don't want to leave out
your music,
the music thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, Bruce and I have become friends on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so he posted a picture of a guitar. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah.
So you've
shared your worship ministry.
So talk about your music background, things you've done with it.
Yeah. So I started playing guitar when I was 14. I think I was in eighth grade. No, that would be 13, I guess. Yeah. So I was 13 years old when I started playing guitar, and very quickly, not trying to toot my own horn, but very quickly got very good at it. And, by the end of that first year, I had already done like a public performance. The following year, my freshman year of high school, I was playing in bands, and these are just high school guys and stuff like that, but they were all the other guys were pretty talented as well. So we were like playing gigs in places we probably shouldn't have been playing when I was only 14 and they were 15 and 16.
That's rather common.
It really is common in the music industry. It's pretty crazy. So then that kind of did its thing. And at some point in my sophomore year of high school, was when I just like decided to become like a born again Christian, you know? So that happened. And when that happened, the youth pastor at the time was like, hey, you should consider doing worship stuff here. And I was like, okay. And then, sure. If I get to play more music stuff like that, I'll do that. Yeah. And so then just plugged right into that. And at that time I was also a band that I'd, you know, helped form. So we were playing shows in different places, and we were also like the worship band for like the youth group at the church at the time. So then, you know, worship stuff and music and actual playing music was a big thing from when I was really young. And then, you know, last senior year of high school, I was in a jazz band at school, and there was a guy there, you know, guys that I've been friends with for a couple of years already. They're like, hey, we're starting this ska band. So if you're familiar with ska music, it's like very reggae influenced, but also like when it really made its way to the States, there was a lot of like punk rock influence into it. And I was like, I am all about this 100%. And so then, we formed, and that band was called Honey Locust, and we ended up playing all over the region, the Southeast region.
Yeah.
And we got signed to a little independent record label. We had some friends that were in a punk rock band. We called it like, we called them our brother band. So we were always touring together, the two bands, you know, wherever we could. And we, and actually the, that other band, was signed before us. And so they helped us get on that record label. And then we were automatically, that label put us all on tour a few times. And so it was pretty crazy, like doing all that. So that guitar you saw the picture of was like the primary guitar I used in that band and had done all that touring
Interesting.
With.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And so then, so yeah, music was a big part of everything. That was plan A. You know, of course, when you're, when you're that young and you're like, I don't really need to go to college. And this band thing is actually doing something. It's actually growing. So maybe I'll just roll the dice and see how this works out. So then that's what I did. So we rolled the dice and did that. And you know, that, you know, the ska thing kind of faded out as far as popularity goes. I ended up joining a different band called Stalemate at the time and did a couple tours with them. Finished that one up and then started another group, which was called Enamored. And that group was a more of like a metal band, very like technical and very like, you know, there was more screaming than there was singing.
Now, most of this is secular music, right?
Not, no, this is all
not
this,
Christian music.
Yeah. This is all Christian music.
It was all Christian music.
But we played a lot of shows and like you would call it a secular venue or, you just call it a bar.
Right.
Okay.
It was just a bar sometimes, you know,
and yeah.
We were playing with all types of bands. And so then, that band was the last one that I was in before I got married. And I remember being somewhere for work for a while. And I was thinking, man, there's no way I can go on tour 3 to 4 weeks, you know, at a time when I'm newly married here. And I'm doing that like every other month or every third month or whatever. Cause that's kind of how touring went at the time. So it's just like, and at that time there was a little mutiny in the band anyways. And the band ended up splitting up. So it was all kind of good timing, you know, especially for my marriage. Yeah. Since it was fresh at the time. And that was that. From that point on, I was pretty much still involved in worship ministry in whatever church I was at.
Yeah.
So then I just jumped full circle, full head on into that, both feet in with that.
And right.
Served in that capacity.
So you've shown creativity in how you've set up your business and how you work it in the skateboarding and music. Do you have any other hidden creative passions that you lean into from time to time?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's kind
to be determined,
to
right?
To be determined,
Later in life, the kids are grown, you lean in and do something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, probably would have to wait till the kids grow up a little bit.
Yeah. That does create a lot of freedom.
Nancy, guess what time it is?
It's time for the random question.
Yeah, so Bruce gets to pick a question from our random question box. Okay. We've had a really great conversation. If you are in the Indianapolis area and you need some, well, you need a gym.
Especially south side.
And you're especially on the south side.
You can drive. It's worth it.
Yeah, Nancy drives to the west side for her for Muay Thai. Yeah, so people can drive.
Yep.
Check out Victory Strength and Fitness. Is there a website for that?
Yeah, victorystrengthandfitness.net.
Okay.
VSFindy.com. Both of those will get you to the same place.
And on Facebook as well?
Yes, Victory Strength and Fitness on Facebook.
Okay.
And Victory Strength on Instagram.
Okay.
All right. So, folks, check it out. Nancy and I both recommend it.
Yes.
Thanks.
And personally, I would say it's made a huge difference in my life.
The first thing that we noticed within a few weeks, it's like we're more stable. Mm-hmm. Like just our presence, walking upstairs, walking here or there, you just feel... It was just a stability like instantly.
Mm-hmm. When we go on vacation, Nancy tries to kill me with some sort of a hike somewhere. Yeah. And then a couple of years ago, we went to Gatlinburg and we did this hike to these
and
falls.
And it did almost kill you.
And it was like up, down, up, down, up, down. I mean, we're not talking little ups. These are big ups.
Yeah.
And we got all the way down and we're down at the base of the falls and there's like these rocks out in there. I thought, I'm going to climb out on those rocks and look around. I almost couldn't.
Yeah.
I just didn't have the balance.
Yeah.
I bet I could now.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. All right. Time for the random question.
Okay. I'll read this out loud.
Yep.
What would you like to be able to experience for the first time again?
For the first time again.
That's tricky.
That is tricky.
Yeah. Hmm. There's quite a few reels I've seen lately of, dads like hanging out with their older kids basically and just like being able to have that moment when they were a toddler again, you know?
Yeah.
And so, cause there's just something about that toddler phase that's just so much stinking fun, you know, with both kids, you know? So yeah, you know, as far as like being able to like,
yeah,
just for a day, have them be, you know, 3 and 5 or
whatever,
you know,
yeah,
that age range, you know, they were just so much fun then.
Yeah. Time flies. And, there's goodness to each area, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, first thing I thought of when you said that is my dad walking me down the street to the park and me riding on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
That would be
awesome.
But what I'm going to share is holding my oldest daughter, the first time we had a baby, mm-hmm. and I'm holding her for the first time.
Yeah.
I think I would love to experience that again with my own child.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back and relive that.
Oh yeah.
That was special. And when we had our second child, I thought there's no way I can feel the same, but I did.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was just the same. It was mm-hmm. just, you just adore this little life that you're holding on to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that would be it for me.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, girls, I do love you very much. But instantly the thought that came into my mind was not as, I guess, kind and heart wrenching as the two of you.
Yeah.
My first thought was to experience, but I still love it. Experience the Indianapolis 500 race for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because it's such, I always tell people, everybody should go once, whether you like racing or not, because it's such a spectacle.
Yeah.
Just all the humans and the, mm-hmm. you know, up to the race, the pageantry and all of that kind of thing. And I love the race, but to experience it for the first time, I think.
Yeah.
That.
It was a toss up between my kids or the first time I was in a barrel surfing. Like I grew up surfing in Jacksonville, and when you actually make it into a barrel, it's just surreal, the whole experience. But honestly, the moment with my kids was heavier, and it was like, I'd rather have that if I had to choose between the two.
Well, at least now I go to the race every year, and my daughters go with me. So I guess that. But it's been great to have you here, Bruce, to talk about business, your creative process.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Encourage you listeners who are in the area to check it out. And maybe we'll see.
And folks everywhere, thank you for joining us for this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. Thank you, Bill White, here
for your
post-production work. And we'll be back soon with another episode. So look for that. Follow us, rate us, review us, but let people know about the Cutter's Notch podcast. Thank you very much. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. Your hosts have been Michael and Nancy DeCamp. Michael is the author of several fantasy thriller novels and short stories that can be found on Amazon or ordered through your local bookseller. Visit www.authormichaeldecamp.com to learn more. His most recent release, The Purveyor of Death, Doc Moon Book 1, is a classic young adult horror novel and the first book in a new series. It's guaranteed to keep you turning pages. Nancy is Michael's number one fan with a love and appreciation for creativity everywhere. The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. Subscribe to catch each new episode as it drops. You can reach us by sending an email to michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. Join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.